All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, October 30th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it. Yay. It is 48 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. It looks like it's going to be a fall day today. It's been raining the last couple days, so it was very cold, windy, and wet. So at least it's not raining anymore. Still a little chilly. And dark makes you want to stay in bed. But it's Friday, so that all changes. We finally made it to the end of the rainbow, at least hypothetically speaking, for this week. All right, where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Dark Act. UN says meat is bad. Bugs are good food. And if you remember, we ended the show yesterday. We had just started a story, and I think I'm going to kick the show off with this here today just because the story disturbed me so much. Titled, Are 3D Printed Insect Snacks the Taste of the Future? We had started by looking at some of the stuff from the day before on Thursday with Dr. Huber's research and GMOs, the getting rid of labeling laws, the TPP, and this 21st Century Cures Act, of course, that opens the back door to direct consumer pharma interaction without the FDA or regulatory agencies necessarily being involved at the front end of things. But what we really then kind of outlined is how this destruction of our environment and our food system, and finding out that stuff that we've been eating has been poisoned forever. Listening to Dr. Huber, we've discovered too that glyphosate is very damaging to the ecosystem, not just in the soil and the plants and the animals and the bees, but probably in humans as well, since it kills your gut bacteria. And then, of course, the UN stepping in and having something to say about cow flatulence and meat being bad for you. And of course, then how bug protein is much healthier for you than a steak. So we're going to kind of kick off there. They really are pushing this agenda. We are not going to be allowed to eat meat at some point here in the future because meat will be deemed unhealthy for you, for the planet, and in the name of Agenda 21 in this 21st century brand new world of nanomedicine and living forever. We can't be a burden to the system. And we need to do what's good for everybody. So 3D printed insect snacks, the taste of the future. All right, let's check this out. Hurdles in food safety, taste, and consumer acceptance await the London South Bank University's quest to join two big food innovations, that being 3D printing and insect-based ingredients. The team of food scientists and product designers hope to bring together in their snack and bread project insects au gratin. Oh my God, hope nobody's eating. But before that can happen, they must overcome challenges in how to defat the ingredients safely. Well, woohoo! They're going to at least think about our safety in eating bugs. This is just unreal. They hope the 3D printing aspect of the project will help tackle certain aesthetics of eating insects, which may put some consumers off. Remember, we talked about this a long time ago. I had said little Johnny isn't going to be eating crickets, okay? Little Johnny is going to be eating a 3D printed Mickey Mouse Disney shape. Nutraceutical made of cricket protein is what's going to happen. Remember, our federal government is hiring somebody to help craft now this new message from a psychological perspective. We also had Google and their Calico project just hire on our director of mental health from our national, what's it called? NIMH. The National M Medical, I don't know, NIMH. What the hell does that stand for? Hold on. NIMH. Mental Health. National Institute of Mental Health. Thank you. They're hiring the director of the National Institute of Mental Health to go work for DARPA or DARPA. Google's, same thing. Google's Calico Project. Now, in the Calico Project, one of the things that, if you remember, if you've researched into it, you'll know that they are working on longevity projects, and it also discussed wearing your little wristband, your 21st century tracking and surveillance device that is going to be doing more than just paying attention to what you're saying. It's going to be actually interacting with your body, taking readings of different nutrients or tell how much oxygen you have, let's say, how many steps you're doing. I just had a friend tell me that their cousin, after having some brushes with the law and alcohol, now have to wear a bracelet that can tell through his sweat. So I don't know. I need to look this up, but this is what he told me. He could tell through his sweat whether he'd been drinking. Maybe also it has some sort of biosensor, right? We talked about the biosensors. Maybe it had some sort of biosensor for alcohol in the general environment. But this is going to become commonplace, people. This is 21st century precision healthcare. This is the new bioeconomy coming to fruition. And insect protein is a part of all this. Anyway, so yes, 3D printed Disney nutraceuticals for Johnny, and he'll be very happy, and they can put all kinds of pretty flavors in them and colors made out of beaver anal gland. Do you remember that story? Beaver anal gland is a quote unquote natural ingredient that's listed on some products, as well as cochleal beetle shells as some natural coloring. I mean, it's disgusting. I think the beaver anal gland secretion is like a fake vanilla flavoring or something. Makes you want to barf. But remember, with this globalization, they don't want you knowing where stuff came from. Japan's been pushing really hard for the last 4+ years to get their products for their struggling economy into the global marketplace, because nobody wants to buy radioactive food. They actually sued South Korea through the World Trade Organization, just like, we've talked about this many times, Canada and Mexico came at the United States through the WTO for labeling their meats for country of origin and said, well, we lost sales. And the World Trade Organization knocked our laws down. So, you know what? They're just going to get rid of it with the TPP and the TTIP. They're going to get around. We found out yesterday there was that story about how intentionally now GMO companies have been exploring technologies that will get around the current, soon to be non-existent with the DARC Act, the current GMO laws, so as not to have to label them. So they're going to do it every which way. If the DARC Act doesn't pass, then hey, guess what? They came up with this new way using CRISPR technology and taking a viral component or bacterial component and modifying it to then physically, when it's in the organism, that will go flip switches and change things within the cell. Some of that RNAi technology. So this is all very scary, and it definitely takes some technical know-how or putting on a thinking cap and a couple cups of coffee and maybe listening to it a few times and doing some reading afterward to understand all the pieces and how they work. But if you understand what's happening, you'd be very scared for the future of our children. And I really think, you know, just looking at Dr. Huber's history, 50 years with the federal government, the DOD, the Biowarfare Project, Fort Detrick. He's a global authority on Russian biowarfare. I mean, the guy is no small potatoes, like I said. And he's standing up and raising the alarm for something that he has lots of proof is doing damage to every biological organism it comes in contact with, but that is very prevalent and been allowed by this corporatocracy, by companies such as Monsanto being in bed with all of our legislators. Slippery palms and butt patting has gotten us to where we are today, and now it is poisoning biology. So good for you, Dr. Huber, and every single one of us out there. Like I said in chat yesterday, we should all be singing like canaries, because guess what? We are the canaries in the coal mine. And there might be some people who have just drifted off to happy sleep with all the dangling carrots that they put in front of us and all the promises of such a great tomorrow. But remember, I'm one of those people for the last 30 years of my life, I've lived in that science fiction utopian future world where I've always hoped, I've waited. That's been my dangling carrot that's motivated me up until this point. And the day that that dopamine sheet fell, Frank Zappa said it best, something about when the play's over and they get rid of all the sets and they pull back the curtains, all you see is the brick wall, because that's what's there. The brick wall that's had a bomb dropped on it, and now we're looking at post-apocalyptic world. That's what I'm seeing right now. Be the canary in the coal mine, whatever you can do. You know what? You want to do something? You want to write a blog? You want to start a show? You want to do a YouTube channel? Just ask me. I'll set you up. I'll figure out a way for you to get your stuff out there. But we should all be doing it, and doing it from a quality perspective, not lunatic perspective. Don't be talking about stuff that, you know, is all theoretical. And that's great, because I'll tell you what, things that were theoretical 20 years ago are truth and fact right now. This is the stuff that's horrifying me in particular. Science fiction become reality. But find stuff where we actually have researchers. And I know FDA research is a bunch of bullshit, and a lot of the stuff that's published out in the scientific journals, at least 50% are paid shills, lies, fabrications. But if you, this is what gets people who won't listen to listen. They point to this stuff and try to disprove things that anti-vaxxers are saying. But the reason why they can point to research showing the vaccines are safe is because a lot of that research is fabricated, or the stuff that showed that it's not safe has been destroyed, as we found out from Mr. Posey up in front of Congress with the CDC whistleblower stuff twice now this year in 2015. And he wants a subcommittee hearing into the destruction of CDC documents by CDC employees showing the connection between autism and MMR. Now, that's one of the big arguments. That's a shiv that was shoved in between our two groups. The groups that we are trying to bring together, the people who are awake and the people who are not awake, you know, little Johnny going to Disney World, and that's why I think 3D nutraceuticals in the shape of Mickey Mouse would be quite fitting. Because little Johnny going to Disney World and supposedly being Typhoid Mary for the measles outbreak, oh my God, dangerous measles, that then started this whole ball rolling of the march forward. Remember, Ebola was the scare tactic before that, to get everybody thinking about bleeding eyeballs and other bodily orifices. You know, then they tried to paint measles as just as a horrifying disease as freaking Ebola. It's a psyop, people. This is all a psyop. So anyway, let's get back to 3D printed insect nutraceuticals. Sorry, I went off on a little tangent there. All right, so the hope is that the 3D printing aspect of the project will help tackle certain aesthetics of eating insects, which may put little Johnny off. That was mine. Last summer, the Food and Drug Agriculture Organization published a report outlining the potential benefits of using insects as a mainstream ding, 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 food source to health. Ding, 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 ding. Okay, this is all about being healthy, people, and not taxing the 21st century white wall surveillance healthcare database system that is coming as a part of precision healthcare. Also, its benefits not only for the mainstream food source to health, but also for the environment, cows and methane, and global food security. And they've talked about, you know, all the different pathogens that show up. They had that church out picnic, whatever it was, where all these people came down with E. coli poisoning or something because, you know, Granny Sally didn't have that potato salad cooled to whatever the temperatures are, 42 degrees Fahrenheit. It was sitting out in the sunshine a little bit too long. Yeah, or salad bars. I remember at one point there were stories, and look it up because I remember this. We did something on the WTF show we used to do about Al-Qaeda running after the salad bars, but they'd actually warned to be careful of salad bars because they might be the targets of bioterror. It's a scary thought though, because if they wanted to start pulling stuff like that as a false flag to force us to then go get some sort of, all out protection bio shield in the future, they could do something like that. Don't think that they haven't. 9/11, right? 9/11 was the beginning of it all to get us all afraid and ready to step up. All right, anyway, printable insect flower. Ken Spears, one of the food technologists involved in the project, told bakeryandsnacks.com that they are working on the development of an insect flower using mealyworms, which could then be incorporated into cereal bars, baked snacks, cake toppings, and later breads. The team is looking at the use of this flower in various carriers, like fondant paste, and I would assume that would be like a fondue. Oh, God. Liquefied crickets and cheese. Oh, I want a bar for crickets and chocolate. Oh. And then, of course, they could like dip succulent strawberries in them and say, "Here, Johnny." Oh, this is just horrifying. Or make intricate shapes like Mickey Mouse. Using 3D printers adapted to extrude food. Now, you know that they're also using 3D printer technology, and it's almost the same technology, at least the same mechanism internally, as the original inkjet printers. Now, I was in technology back in those days, so I remember when inkjets first came out. We had already had lasers, but they were super expensive, and the inkjet was a full-colored, not cheap, but economical printing solution that was almost, I don't know, it wasn't quite anywhere near laser, but it was almost passable, at least in the first generation of like 360 pixel inkjet printing. It was almost an alternative for those of us who wanted a full color printing solution. But what's interesting is that when they started making these 3D printed organs, do you remember that? What they were doing is putting in stem cells and then making some sort of scaffolding for the organ. And, I was assuming, I didn't really read this, but I was assuming that they probably did some sort of scan. Let's say they're trying to replace a kidney. They'll do a scan of the kidney to make it a 3D rendered model on screen, and then create some sort of scaffolding. And I had read about the scaffolding. They were using some sort of biodegradable sugar, natural sugar, to build the scaffolding with that they then printed the stem cells on. And they coaxed those stem cells, at least in the case, the hypothetical case we're talking about, they coaxed the stem cells to be kidney cells, sprayed it on the scaffolding, and it literally grew the organ. They've been doing it with ears. They probably have done it with a nose, like in Sleeper, that movie. But they've been doing that now for a while. I don't know if they've done any transplantations yet. We could look at that one, but they're getting pretty far. So anyway, they're using the same sorts of technologies now for 3D printed food. And like you used to have cartridges for different colors, and you typically had five cartridges. There was the black, the red, the yellow, the blue, and the magenta, I believe. Or was it the red? I don't know. They all red, magenta, cyan. I don't remember what the other one was. There are four or five different cartridges. So what they do instead now in these food printers is they put different nutraceuticals into them. Now, we looked yesterday at that test tube grown beef using muscle stem cell fibers from beef. And I was trying to find that video yesterday. I couldn't find it, but I definitely saw it. They had a demonstration where they put these stem cells into a petri dish, and then they physically use electrodes like a TENS unit, right? Because, I mean, they, if you read about the TENS unit and people using them to, like, bulk up their muscles, you'll see they do that in Russia. I have one of my friends, after I got my TENS unit, it's like, oh, yeah, look what they do in Russia with these things. I'm not doing that, thank you very much. But it was interesting. They put them on their abs, and then it would zap electrically bzz, 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 and stimulate the muscle. And it would do that. I mean, it's pretty painless. You can't really feel it. And they do that while they were just sitting there. But it would make them have rock-hard abs. Like, how insane is that? But that's the same premise that they were doing with these stem cells for this test tube beef to make it into muscle meat that then, as it would grow and proliferate, they could then shape it to a test tube burger. But think about something like that. Like, we listened to the father of nanotechnology, Eric Drexler, talking about nanofactories and how from, you know, manufacturing today, we start from the top down with large raw product that then we shape and cut and drill and melt and make into what we need to make it. But nanofactories would be starting from the cellular and atomic level with the basic elements that we would need to build something and then construct them. Well, this is kind of like that in-between phase. You know, 3D printed foods would be, you would have to have some sort of flour. So I guess that would be the insect protein. And then you would have some sort of nutraceutical. So I don't know, maybe some sort of mushy vegetables. Maybe they could grow sprouts, you know, under a little UV light behind your wall. So you could have your 3D replicator built into the wall and then have a little farm going on behind the wall, behind a secret little door where you had like a UV lamp growing little mini sprouts of different kinds. A robot then, a little robotic arm that picks them every day and puts them into a little blender, bzz, 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 and then sticks them, fills up the alfalfa sprout printing cartridge. You could also have your little petri dish exercising. You know, get your, buy your monthly cartridge of beef stem cells that then, you know, gives it a squirt each time it gets empty and exercises your meat cells. So once a week, you can have your allotted beef quotient that's given to you by the UN Health Organization, right? And they'll know because they'll be able to detect those amino acids in your blood through your nanobots in your wristband that's then Wi-Fi-ly broadcast out to your dossier that's monitoring you with AI 24/7. I mean, guys, this stuff isn't fantasy. All that technology exists now. I'm an engineer by trade, a network engineer by trade, as a matter of fact, and I already could see if you gave me the tools, I could figure out how to get this done already. So, you know, put a couple bazillion dollars behind it and all these big brains walking around bumping into each other. I'm sure they figured something out here. And if not, in the very near future. All right. Anyway, let's get back to our bug protein. So I'm predicting that the replicators of Star Trek aren't too far into the future. The team is looking at using this flour in various carriers like a fondant paste. Yes, that's the cricket fondue, to make intricate shapes using 3D printers adapted to extrude food. Quote, there are a number of technical challenges in printing insect flour, and we have to mix it with a fondant or a carrier in order to give it some structure. Ah, that's what a fondant is, some big sticky gooey stuff. The large particle sizes of the insect flour and the high fat content. God, you guys don't even know. Like, this is one of those red button, Jules gonna starve to death rather than eat an insect type things. The high fat content causes caking and blocking of the injectorids. Oh my God. Now, if anyone's ever had an inkjet printer, you know that those heads get clogged. You gotta run the cleaning. The cleaning routine. Oh, we're going to be blowing out large insect parts. Oh, arms, legs, thorax. All right, collect yourself. And this was not going to be my topic for today, but I guess it's all right. It's Friday. Food safety and tasting challenges. In order to prevent this, The food technologists must develop ways to must develop ways to defect the insect ingredients. However, this is currently posing food safety issues. I mean, you have to admit, this article is just like a total free giveaway for comedy. Just sick, twisted comedy, and not even funny, because like, this is a real article. This is not some made up onion thing. All right. Quote, the insect material has a, oh my God. The insect material has a savory, meaty taste and quickly becomes rancid because of the high fat content. You know, it just makes me think of those big, gooey, yellow, squishable hoo-ha bugs that they have in New Zealand. They were the most repulsive things. I was watching one of those Dual Survivor shows not too long ago, Cody, and it was with the guy that now left, the one who used to walk in bare feet all the time. I don't remember his name, but they didn't get along at all. But the guy in bare feet, whatever South Pacific Island they were trying to survive on, that was one of the things that they found to eat, were those hoo-ha bugs. And I mean, I remember those from the 70s when I was down visiting my family. My cousins pointed them out to me and showed me how disgusting they were, but they're like yellow, squishy, round, white worms, like caterpillars. And when they squished, they were gooey yellow inside. It was the most disgusting thing ever. And they ate them raw on the TV show. It was really gross. I mean, stuff like that, that stuff that just sets me off the edge. Anyway, back to this. I'm going to read this again. The insect material has a savory, meaty taste and quickly becomes rancid because of high fat content. We are interested in defatting the material, but current techniques would make it unsafe to eat. Now, what's that? Pouring turpentine over it? I mean, come on. What? I'd like to see why these unsafe defatting. I mean, what about all the low-fat food that's out there? I'm sure they figured it out somehow. We can mask the taste in products by using a range of spices and flavorings. Yes, like beaver anal glands. And no, it doesn't say that, but look that up. That is considered a quote-unquote natural ingredient on food labels today. Current projects are likely to focus on masking the taste in conventional products, Spears says. Yes. And is that because mealy worm bug flour doesn't taste too good? That's what my guess would be. We are currently using insects reared for feeding wildlife, so there are a number of food safety issues, which reduces our ability to provide edible products, he says. Now, and that's the end of the section. That's the end of the food safety and taste challenge section. So talk about vague and scary, and especially with all this, you know, being healthy and safe for the environment, and wow, it's better than a steak for you from the UN. It's got to make you worry, as we're seeing the pants drop of all these regulatory food agencies in the name of corporatocracy. I think they're going to get around those food safety and taste issues pretty easily here in the near future. All right, functional opportunity. Of course, this is how we're going to make money. The insect flour, which Spears actually says actually produces something more like ground dried meat than cereal flour's elastic dough, can have 50% protein when dried. Yay! He says that this could make it an attractive supplement. Susanna Soares. See, and you know, if they consider this a supplement, by the way, there you see it. You got the FDA involved on the supplemental end as well. Susanna Soares, senior lecturer at the university and leader of the project, told us that insect flour could have potential in high energy and protein sports nutrition snacks. However, She said that it could also have broader appeal as a highly nutritional ingredient, since insects are high in calcium, iron, and magnesium, with four, just count them, four crickets, providing as much calcium as what? Oh, a whole glass of milk. So guys, you don't need cows anymore for beef or for milk, because you can get it from the crickets. Anyway, since insects are high in calcium, iron, and magnesium, with just four crickets providing as much calcium as in a glass of milk, and dung beetles by weight contain more iron than beef. So it's going to be a combo. Make sure you take your cricket dung beetle supplement, Johnny. Because we want you to do well in school today. Oh, my God. Spears said, prices for insects are not much cheaper than meat, but insects can be produced more cheaply in farm systems. Now, take it from somebody who's raised crickets. I had a lizard at one time many years ago. He was a dwarf tegu. Dwarf tegus are not like iguanas, where iguanas eat vegetable matter. Dwarf tegus eat meat. And they liked mealyworms and crickets. So I used to have to go to the pet store every 3 or 4 days, and I'd get 20 crickets. They're pretty expensive. They're a couple dollars for like 20 crickets. And you'd have them in a bag tied with air in it. And after a couple days, you'd have to make sure that you fed them all to the lizard, because they didn't live too long in the bag with the tied thing on it for air. So then I got smart. I got a 10-gallon fish tank. I put some paper towels in there, the paper towel that the crickets came with, and some litter, corn litter from the that I used for the lizard as well, and a little heat lamp. And then you just squirt water with a spray bottle on the sides of the fish tank, and the crickets would go up and eat it. You give them fish food for feeding them. And the next thing I knew, I was just trying to keep 20 crickets alive. Next thing I knew, I'm looking, I'm like, oh my God, they sent crickets that had some sort of mites on them, because I saw all these things all over the glass. And within a few weeks, I had like 1,000 crickets. No, not really. I probably had like 100 crickets. And I was like, holy shit. So I started raising my own crickets by accident. And they weren't that bad, honestly. But I got to tell you, the worst part was like for the lizard, because they like, tegus are predatory animals. They're like a miniature Komodo dragon. If you look them up, they look very similar, but they're small. Not small, but I'd say like the palm of your hand, and then their tail would go maybe up halfway up your arm. They like to hunt, so you had to give them the crickets live. And since the crickets weren't like full out nutrients, you also had this powder, this vitamin powder. So you put the crickets in a bag and you'd shake them in this powder, and then you'd throw them into the tank, and the lizard would freak out and go after them and crunch, crunch, crunch. You'd eat them live. It was disgusting. So again, another one of those things, like I love my lizard. He was such an awesome little creature, but the whole cricket live food thing just did not fly with me very well. But anyway, them saying that producing crickets isn't much cheaper than meat, I could guarantee you that I had a good 100 crickets at least. And if four gives you just as much calcium as a glass of milk, iron and magnesium, that's a hell of a lot cheaper than a $13 8-ounce steak, okay? All right, let's read this first paragraph. I've managed 36 minutes on one story. Spears said that while there is no particular advantage in using insect material for 3D printing, except the UN is hot and heavy all over it, it could prove useful in enhancing the appeal of such an ingredient for otherwise resistant consumers. And I'm going to predict that that will become a new term that we are going to see more frequently as Google gets a mental health director, as does the federal government. Resistant consumers. You and I are resistant consumers. They need a new Edward Bernays. If history is anything to teach us a lesson, Edward Bernays, the man who is responsible for a lot of our Western shopping, instant gratification addiction, this will be the new Edward Bernays to get us to accept with open arms the 21st century biology 2.0 white-walled Buck Rogers agenda. Source said that 3D printing enables us to explore the aesthetics of food, and in this instance, insects. And the radical use of 3D printing technology may enable us to overcome the traditional aesthetic issues of eating insects and to challenge people's perceptions of eating insects. This use of insect protein as a printable material opens up a wide range of new applications and questions about sustainability, raw materials, nutrition, and food acceptance, she added. Yeah, that's what it's all about. You know, and a couple little sprinkles here and there, some special RNA nutraceutical, you know, GMO banana vaccines. You know, the gastrointestinal tract is one of the most efficient ways for them to get this stuff into us. And I actually found a story, by the way. Maybe we'll look at this. It actually wasn't even a story. It was a study. I posted on LaVon's wall on Facebook this morning, so I'm hoping she sees it. But there's been a study done now about how they always thought, and I'm going to scroll here because I didn't pull this one up. They always thought that when you ingested food, that the digestion process broke the food down into its component amino acids and things, and then absorbed it into the digestive system. But they didn't believe that much DNA passed through. And we've talked about this before. I mean, I brought this up. I brought up studies that we've looked at that suggested stuff from Dr. Huber again, that some of this genetically modified material is making it across the brain, blood-brain barrier and into our bloodstream, into our brains, into our cells. There's been some studies, too, done at Stanford and different universities like that that have shown that some of the genetic material, the DNA material that's in the vaccinations are also getting into our cells and contaminating them. Well, there's now a study that shows that, yes, absolutely, stuff that we're eating, the DNA is not getting broken down. It's passing that intestinal bloodstream barrier, and it's getting into our cells. Anyway, let's finish the very last quotation out of this 3D bug protein and we'll put this to bed. Though there is a whole host list of 3D printed bug food stories at the bottom under related news. So I'll definitely put the story into the notes. I'll drop it in the chat when I'm done here. Anyway, this researcher Spears added, quote, I am sure there would be some interest from the industry. Oh, I'm sure too, if you could demonstrate a sustainable and high quality food agreement. Yes, like I said, the UN is all over bugs for a sustainable global future and feeding the bazillions of people that are on this planet. And in the medium term, this is likely to be more of an interest to animal feed manufacturers than it is for consumers. Well, phew, at least we're safe for a little while longer. All right. Here's a study I ran across last night before I took like an 8-10 hour siesta. Actually felt good. My brain feels better today. Titled, and this is out of PLOS-1. This is a scientific journal we've run across quite a number of times in our different research that we've done. But it's PLOS-1.org. This is under journals.plos.org, titled, Complete Genes May Pass From Food to Human Blood. Yes, I said it. Let's read the abstract. Our bloodstream is considered to be an environment well separated from the outside world and the digestive tract. Now, yes, the digestive tract is a barrier, so organisms cannot pass directly into the bloodstream, as is the blood-brain barrier, which DARPA's been working really hard to find ways to cross that easily. Nanotech is one. Up the nose, intranasally, is another. Also, using ultrasound, we discovered, you know, in their cures for Alzheimer's, it's always about finding the cure using this mad Frankenstein medicine. Let's open that blood-brain barrier up to be able to then put something in there, some sort of, I don't know if they were using nanobots or nanoparticles, something of that nature. In conjunction with breaking up those plaques. Though interesting, just connecting some stuff that we looked at the beginning of the week with that the resonance to kill those different cancers that music professor discovered. The Alzheimer's plaques in that Australian study we looked at a few months ago were also being broken up by the ultrasound. So different frequencies, but same concept. And that music professor pointed out, too, was all about finding the resonant frequency of the organism. Just like, you know, dinging the glass before you sang the note. And by dinging that glass, you found its resonant frequency to make it shatter. So pretty cool. I think we should really start digging into some of that stuff. I don't know. Maybe in the next month. I need to catch up with research and letting my brain rest. All right. Anyway, let's get back to the story. So our bloodstream is considered to be an environment well separated from the outside world and the digestive tract. According to the standard paradigm, large macromolecules consumed with food cannot pass directly to the circulatory system. During digestion, proteins and DNA are thought to be degraded into small constituents, amino acids and nucleic acids, respectively, and then absorbed by a complex active process and distributed to various parts of the body through the circulation system. Here, based on the analysis of over 1,000 human samples from our 4 independent studies, and I wonder where those human samples came from. 1,000 people apparently checked the box that said, yeah, and actually, I think I read this somewhere later in the story. They were from colonoscopies. So when you were signing your papers for the colonoscopies and you signed off on it, was there a box you inadvertently checked or on purpose that said, yes, you can use my biological material for human experimentation? Because that seems to be the way that this is all happening. Check the box so we can have your DNA to help decode the genome and come up with more mad science. Anyway, here, based on an analysis of over 1,000 human samples from 4 independent studies, we report evidence that meal-derived as in food that you've eaten, DNA fragments, which are large enough to carry complete genes, can avoid degradation and through an unknown mechanism, so they're not quite sure yet how this is happening, enter the human circulation system. Now, guys, in all the shit we've read about GMOs and genetically modified crap, and we're eating that stuff, and now they find out, whoops, even if they'd been saying that the stuff was safe because your body broke it all down and didn't cross that small intestine blood barrier, well, 4 independent studies now and over 1,000 human samples have shown that is not the case. Yes, it's a grand big petri dish. This is why raising the alarm today, not falling for the peer pressure and the mumbo jumbo brain manipulation to confuse people, this whole 3D printing thing about convincing the populace, by making it look pretty, because that's how we've been trained. Pretty pictures. I took a lot of classes in the concepts of adult learning when I was a technical trainer. And that was one of the ways that I found to get these people who didn't want to give two shits about what I had to teach them, but that was required for their job, was making simple cheat sheets with big, pretty pictures. I've also done years of web design. Guess what? Simple pages with pretty, colorful pictures. That's what gets attention. Our mobile devices, right? The attention span of a goldfish is how we've been trained. All right, anyway, back here. So this food, meal-derived DNA fragments, which are large enough to carry complete genes, can avoid degradation and, through an unknown mechanism, enter the human circulation system. In one of the blood samples, the relative concentration of plant DNA is actually higher than the human DNA. Holy shit. Now, 90% of the corn in the U.S. is genetically modified. We found out that 80% of the entire U.S. food supply has genetically modified ingredients in it. And they're finding that in one of the blood samples, there actually is more plant DNA. And I'll guarantee you it was GMO plant DNA, at least some of it. There's more plant DNA in the blood sample or the tissue sample than there is in human DNA. What does that mean? You know, if we start eating insect nutraceuticals, I've talked about this before, watching, I don't know, it was in a, I always thought it was a Sesame Street, but I found the clip the one day in the 70s. It was like the electric company. No, it was one of those public service announcements that did the, I'm just a bill. They also did one about, you are what you eat. Time for timer. You are what you eat. And that can't ring even more true now than it did then. In the 70s, they had only half a clue. They know what's going on now, or at least 90% of it. So if we eat bug protein, potentially could some of that DNA pass that digestive barrier and start integrating their DNA into our cells? I mean, when they make a genetically modified organism, what they do, spider goats, they take some DNA from a spider and they mix it into a zygote from a goat. And then they get it to reproduce. They actually, I don't think we ever watched that video, but I'd watched it and it was really interesting. It was a documentary on how GMOs actually work. And they were showing how they used a bacterial or a viral organism, I don't remember which, and they like back-end loaded it with their mutant DNA, whatever they wanted to mix into this other organism. And then they infected, they even used that term, they infected this other organism with their new Trojan horse payload. And I wish I remembered. I almost think it was a bacteria. So let's just call it bacteria for now. But if I'm wrong, look it up. This is all in how the actual biological process behind genetic modification works. So let's just say it's a bacteria. So they take this genetically modified bacteria now that has this genetically modified DNA in it for what they want to infect this new organism with. And they put it into the organism. And the organism goes out, this bacteria goes out, and it finds cracks in the cells. And it infects it, like a bacterial infection. And as it infects it, it gets into the cytoplasm and the nucleus of the cell. And it invades it. And then the DNA mixes, and it starts reproducing itself. So maybe it is a virus, actually, because that's what viruses do. It reproduces itself. And as it reproduces itself, it starts to then proliferate throughout the organism. This is some of this newfangled medicine that they're talking about. This is how it works. It proliferates. You know, when I keep forgetting his name, the father of nanotechnology, Eric Drexler, if I say that, I remember. Eric Drexler had talked about nanotech and how some of this stuff works. And I mean, there's more than just nanobots. There's this RNAi and the infection with these viruses. And I am pretty certain now that it is a virus because it self-replication, that is a trait of a virus. Anyway, back to this. So just understanding like how important this discovery is, that this DNA from what you've consumed is somehow by some unknown mechanism crossing as a whole gene into your circulatory system. Okay, this says that the plant DNA concentration shows a surprisingly precise log normal distribution in the plasma samples, while non-plasma, so I guess they had their hands on some newborn cord blood as well, it says, while non-plasma cord blood control samples were found to be completely free of plant DNA. Now, it's interesting because Dr. Huber had also mentioned in one of the snippets of the Democracy Now! Interview that he had found telltale signs of glyphosate in the placental tissue of the animals that consume the GMO alfalfa. But if you know how the placenta works, the placenta is the attachment to the inside of the uterus for the mother, and it connects the developing fetus to the circulatory system so you can pass nutrients and the blood passes through. But it also has a very, very strict filtration system that keeps most of the toxins out of the developing fetus. Not all stuff can pass through there. They've been finding stuff in fetal tissue, but it is a secondary from, because you have to eat it first, it goes into your intestine, then it's absorbed through the intestine and supposedly without any dangerous materials into your circulatory system. Once it's through your circulatory system, it then gets to the placenta where they can get oxygen and nutrients, and then that placenta filters it out. But it's very interesting to note that they used cord blood. So blood after the placenta, blood that was in the cord when the baby was born and they cut it. And they found zero plant DNA. So it is now, and what makes me wonder about this is we've read a lot also about GMO ingestion and leaky gut syndrome. And leaky gut syndrome, we discovered this as well. I dug into this deep for my research because I was a sufferer of all these symptoms of being poisoned over the last 20 years. So it was personal to me. Leaky gut syndrome is caused by bad digestive bacteria. Dr. Huber had talked about what a strong antibiotic glyphosate was and how it killed all the beneficial gut bacteria, as well as in the soil and in the plants and everywhere else, and stopped the proper uptake of nutrients. But it causes leaky gut. Well, in leaky gut, maybe this unknown mechanism that allows unfully digested DNA from our edible plants to cross that barrier, guys. I really think that's what's happening. You're not digesting properly if your gut bacteria is infected. If there's bad gut bacteria in there. If you've had C. difficile take over, and he mentioned that also. That's that one that causes explosive diarrhea 24/7. Thank God I never had that. But I've known people who have had that. Uh-oh, somebody is, I think they're calling S.M. Gibson. Whoops, gonna hang up. He just came online. He's probably gonna yell at me because I didn't transfer the phone. untransfer the phone, that is. But leaky gut syndrome can be attributed to a lot of the Western diseases that we have today. Anyway, all right, well, maybe we can read just a little bit more of this. We're almost to the end of the show. Or should we save the rest of this for Monday? I don't know. Because there was, you know what, for Friday, let's put this aside because it's pretty technical. We'll hop back into this. This is a good subject to kick off with on Monday. And let's do a couple little things that caught my attention. Not only is it going to be Amazon with drone home delivery, but guess who else is getting into the game? Good old Walmart. Walmart seeks to test drones for home delivery and pickup. And this is out of Reuters, October 26th, so a couple days ago. Walmart Stores, Inc. have applied this past Monday to U.S. regulators for permission to test drones for home delivery, curbside pickup, so they're not going to come to your door at least, and checking warehouse inventories, a sign that it plans to go head-to-head with Amazon in using drones to fill and deliver online orders. The world's largest retailer by revenue has for several months been conducting indoor tests of small unmanned aircraft systems, the term regulators use for drones, and is now seeking for the first time to test the machines outdoors. And they've already given the go-ahead to the Amazon drones. And I really want to know how that partnership is coming between Verizon, NASA, and the FAA to build the new surveillance system for being able to track and keep drones from crashing into each other. I don't know if you guys knew that, but we did a story on that a while ago. The FAA, NASA, and Verizon, they're going to be doing space and cell tower mapping to keep all of these drones straight. It's pretty insane. And then I saw a new story. 20 other companies are jumping on board, so it'll be good to see. All right, anyway, they now are seeking for the first time to test machines outdoors, and its plans are to use drones manufactured by China's SZDJI Technologies. All right, so Chinese drones now flying in our skies. Everybody have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is up next.